Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is part two of our weekly Q&A with Layla. Happy August. And what do you have in store for us for this half of the podcast?
Okay, let's see. This question comes from Marianne. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I really love the new clinical focus segments. It's so good to hear you have the opportunity to speak on one topic uninterrupted. Thank you for this feature.
Thanks to her. And, yeah. You know, I say on that subject, it really is a pleasure to be able to do that because it is so free from the constraints of regular radio. If you listen to my program on weekends, there are a lot of commercials of necessity. It's, you know, that's the way radio works. They, you know, helped us pay the freight for, you know, commercial radio. But with these podcasts, they're ideal because I can hold forth for as long as I want, as long as people have the patience to listen, and we can cover a subject in depth. So, you know, I'm enjoying doing them, and I'll continue, and we'll keep talking about things hopefully relevant to you.
Terrific. Regarding the adrenal podcast, could an untreated high cortisol state induce hypothyroid in addition to eventually leading to adrenal fatigue? And she has a second question. You briefly mentioned pregnenolone. In addition to the therapies you outlined, what's your opinion of supplementing 25 milligrams of pregnenolone in a patient with adrenal burnout, hypothyroid, and low hormones?
Okay, so let's tackle part one, which is, you know, remind me.
High cortisol.
It always happens to me when people ask me two questions. It's like, what was the first part?
The first part, could a high cortisol intake induce hypothyroid? And, in addition to adrenal fatigue.
And the answer is yes, and this is how it works. High levels of hormones like estrogen and cortisol interfere with the conversion of T4 to T3. T4 is one of the things that the thyroid makes, and it's actually what you get when you take Synthroid or Levoxyl. Actually, Levoxyl is off the market now, L-thyroxine, which are either brand or generic forms of conventional thyroid medication. When you take natural thyroid, armor thyroid, you get both T4 and T3, but the body also has to undertake a conversion of T4 to T3 in the cells. And when you have high levels of stress and high levels of cortisol, stress can actually make your thyroid work less well. And it's sometimes hard to tell from your thyroid blood test. Your thyroid blood test may look ostensibly normal, but the amount of thyroid hormone that your cells see and that helps your metabolism, helps you burn off calories, lose weight, you know, and helps you in so many ways, is reduced. So yes, in that sense, a high cortisol could be a problem. Now, here's a converse problem, and we've seen this in our practice. You say a patient has very low adrenals, and we say, okay, you got low adrenals, you got low thyroid, let's tackle the thyroid first. And we give them a little thyroid, and they get blown away. And it's like, no, but I gave you such a small amount of thyroid, and you really need thyroid. And that's the converse thing, is that the thyroid, without some opposition from adequate adrenal function, is really very active. And it's almost like there's no counterforce to the thyroid. And the thyroid, it's almost like building a house on a shaky foundation if you give a patient thyroid who doesn't have adequate adrenal support. So we've seen that in some patients where it totally makes sense to give them thyroid, but if we approach it in a not strategic way and don't support their adrenals first, it's going to seem like the thyroid we gave them is too strong.
Okay.
So that's okay. Part one. Mm-hmm. And part two is pregnenolone. You know, pregnenolone is a very interesting substance, and it is popular in the natural medicine field to prescribe pregnenolone. And it is sometimes referred to as a mother hormone. It actually is earlier in the production line than DHEA, which is sometimes referred to as a mother hormone of sorts, because DHEA goes off in several different directions. There's a lot more research on DHEA. I have a better sense of how to handle DHEA. Mm-hmm. Pregnenolone produces progesterone. It also produces cortisol. And I think it may have a role to play, but I am a little cautious about the use of pregnenolone. I can't remember the last patient that I prescribed pregnenolone for. And I know it can be beneficial, but I think it's tricky. And I think more research needs to be done on pregnenolone before we can really be confident, especially when people buy pregnenolone and they self-diagnose and they self-treat. I think measuring levels of pregnenolone is appropriate, but also mm-hmm. following the downstream metabolites of it. It's like, you know, you raise your pregnenolone, okay, fine, but what is it doing to other hormones? Is it giving you too much cortisol, too much progesterone? It's hard to predict because mm-hmm. People metabolize it differently. And it is thought to be something that enhances mental acuity and alertness and may have a role to play. 25 milligrams is a pretty low amount. So, okay. You know, if you try it, you may like it. It may help you, but it's a little like flying blind because you don't know what it's going to do.
Yeah. So DHEA, even for adrenal fatigue, especially people with adrenal burnout, DHEA actually is
yeah.
one of the things that
well
that's helpful.
It works often though is patients will have high cortisol and low DHEA. It's a little bit like a seesaw, and we can use the DHEA sometimes to bring into balance the stress hormones. It's like when stress predominates, DHEA is depleted and cortisol is raised. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we can get a better handle on the stress by adding a little DHEA and correspondingly suppressing the cortisol. That can help to take the edge off a hyper-stressed state. But there are also some situations where you have both low cortisol and low DHEA, and you need both. You need to support both.
That's true. That person is really dragging.
Yeah, that was
produced
like low libido, low blood mm-hmm. pressure, weak and woozy. Exercise knocks them out instead of invigorates them. Stress
them
blows them away.
Quick.
Yeah, absolutely. Licorice is a real good adrenal support. And again, we enumerate some of these topics in our podcast of a couple of weeks ago, a clinical focus podcast on adrenal. So reference that mm-hmm. if you're thinking that you either have excess stress or conversely, adrenal burnout, which is a low adrenal state.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our next question is from Rich in New Hampshire. Dear Dr. Hoffman, love your show. Can you comment on the biological availability of whey protein that has been denatured versus whey that has supposedly not been subject to heat and thus denaturing? Does the body not, in the digestive tract, denature all protein into simple amino acids so we can use them? So what is all the fuss about using only whey that has been cold-pressed
right.
and not denatured? I actually agree with Rich.
Well,
if this were the case, every steak would be denatured when we cook it,
right.
which is true. It is.
right.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so, yeah, let's look at it. I mean, I'm not...
First of all, there are three ways to denature protein.
Sure.
Heat, acidity,
yep.
and are the stomach acid contents, or acid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I already said acidity. Agitation,
right.
like
right.
beating egg whites,
right.
okay, will denature protein. Adding acid, our stomach acid, which will denature
And there are certain
protein,
enzymes
cooking.
Which are peptidases, which break mm-hmm. the bonds of peptides and proteins and convert them to individual amino acids. So let me answer it this way. Foods get digested not as individual amino acids usually. They get digested into usually short, very short chains of
dipeptides,
tripeptides
yeah,
and they can
yeah.
then be absorbed into the gastrointestinal tract. I think with whey, the big issue is can you get glutathione precursors? Because whey is a good source of, ultimately, the body breaks down whey and then reassembles the peptides as glutathione. Glutathione is a tripeptide. It's a three amino acid chain. And so the claim is that if you get enough, let's see, it's going to be cysteine, glutamine, and glycine. I think those are the ones that are making up glutathione, if I remember correctly. If you get enough of those, and you absorb enough of those, they'll reassemble in your body, you'll make glutathione. You know, this is the claim. I think that the science is, it's on the way. It's not conclusive about how whey supports glutathione in the body. That mm-hmm. may be one of the advantages of whey protein vis-a-vis soy protein or vis-a-vis rice protein or all the other protein sources that are around. Almond protein, I think even they have. Egg protein.
Mm-hmm.
Egg, however, is a very complete protein. It's a very balanced amino acid protein. So, he's right. I mean, ultimately, you do digest and break down the proteins.
So, do you think it's just marketing hype?
I think there's an element of that, yeah.
To some degree?
Right.
Possibly. Okay. Good to take NAC to boost glutathione anyway, whether you're taking whey or not.
Yes, indeed.
That's always a great idea. I take it.
And that is, by the way, N-acetylcysteine. It provides an absorbable form of cysteine, which goes into production of glutathione. So, yeah.
Right. Okay. We hope we've answered your question, Rich. The next question comes from Colleen. Thank you for the continuous info on health issues. I do have to say I miss the Daily Hour. I used to listen to your program in the evening. Is your radio program carried on in Canada at any of our stations? Well, you're just going to have to look online for that, Colleen, I think.
Right. I think CKLW out of Detroit carried it and may still carry it. So you have to look at the directory. It's out of Windsor, Ontario. But, you know, people got to get with the program because more and more, you know, I'll give you an example. I wanted to listen to a certain radio host that's carried locally this afternoon. And, you know, while I was preparing for the show, you know, a little background information. And it was like, I turned it on. It's a Mets game. Well, I happen to be a Yankees fan. I don't give a hoot about the Mets. So I wanted to listen to that host. So I went and I found the website of a station that carries that broadcast. And I listened via the stream. Now, you can always listen to my program via the stream at drhoffman.com from noon to 2 on Saturdays. I can, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, you're already savvy enough to recognize that. And also, we do a lot of additional broadcasts that are not on commercial or terrestrial radio. They're just podcasts, and they're available at drhoffman.com. So you got to get with the program.
Yes. You know,
I know a 95-year-old who just loves her iPad. She's, like, banging away at her iPad, and she's connecting with her grandchildren, and she's, like, having a great time downloading programs from Netflix. She's watched the whole season of House of Cards already. And, you know, this is – and she looks at Facebook. So, you know, don't tell me you're too old to do this so that you can't – you know, an old dog can't learn new tricks. You got to get with the program because – the world is changing, and good quality programming sometimes is not just, you know, turn on the radio. You're going to get a lot of unfiltered you-know-what if you just listen, you know, turn on your radio and listen to one station all the time.
Okay. Well, Colleen has a question for you.
Okay.
As a person who deals with heart problems, would you kindly comment on elevated cardiac enzyme creatine kinase, if it can be lowered naturally, meaning without drugs?
Well, CPK, right? Well, there's so creatine phosphokinase, it is a marker for heart attacks, but it's also a marker for muscle damage or muscle disease. So when you're having a heart attack, there's some damage to the muscle, and one of the tests that's done to see if you're either, you know, whether you're just having a indigestion or whether you have a heart attack is a CPK, along with other tests.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you damage muscle, there's an elevated CPK. I remember a case where when during my medical training, a young man was admitted to the hospital. And he had chest pain, and he was all, you know, he's all messed up, you know, short of breath and, you know, in distress. And we did a blood test, and he had a very elevated CPK. So immediately put him in the coronary care unit. We talked to him a little more, and we discovered that he had just been in a fight. He'd just been like beaten up with a 2x4. And so there was muscle damage, and it simulated the heart muscle damage. This was 30 years ago now. We have better tests to assess heart attack. But it can also occur in certain muscular diseases like myositis, you know, dermatomyositis and things like that. There are certain autoimmune diseases that attack the muscles. So, you know, I'm not sure what we're attacking here. I mean, if you want a supplement to reduce your CPK and you're having a heart attack, I would suggest you forget about the supplement and get appropriate care. If you have an elevated CPK because you have dermatomyositis, and we actually have, it's a relatively uncommon condition, but we would attack it as an autoimmune disease. We would give fish oil. We would put patients on a paleo diet or identify their food allergens. Clean up their diet, clean up their gastrointestinal tract, give them vitamin D, give them natural anti-inflammatories. That would maybe help to lower the CPK and also reduce the muscle aches and weakness associated with that.
Mm.
So, you know, I don't really get a sense of what condition this person has?
She doesn't say.
Okay.
Yeah, she doesn't say. Just how to lower naturally the CPK.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
Well,
okay.
All right. Yeah.
Best of luck, Colleen.
Yeah. Right.
We have a question that comes all the way from Thessaloniki, Greece.
Oh, that's far out.
Yeah, from Apostolia.
Uh-huh.
Is the person's name. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I'm a 37-year-old patient suffering from CIDP syndrome, chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy.
Uh-huh.
I've been treated with cortisone by my doctor for 6 years. I'm suffering a severe rebound, and my daily dosage is now 25 milligrams a day. I feel worse because of the cortisone. I'm looking for any other way to treat this. I found your address in an American book under the title Living Well with Autoimmune Disease by Mary Shomon.
Right.
And decided to send you an email. Now, I have numbness, tingling in my legs. My doctor says that this treatment is helpful enough. But
no,
you know,
I'm not that happy with that treatment. And medicine in Greece is probably very sophisticated. But just to put a person on steroids is not a really... mm-hmm. modern or advanced way to treat the condition. I think it can help, but long term it can have disastrous consequences. So, you know, I would look for
any natural alternative supplement.
I would even say there might be better conventional treatment for it, and you might have to travel to another place within Europe to a place where there's a better standard of care for this, because a variety of treatments and other medications that might be better. But from the standpoint of nutrition, okay, what do we look at? We look at levels of heavy metals, mercury contamination, lead. We would use high doses of alpha lipoic acid, maybe as much as, 3,000 a day. Mm-hmm. We would use...
This is an autoimmune condition.
Yes, yes.
Right? You would consider LVN, low-dose naltrexone?
I absolutely would consider low-dose naltrexone, yes.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Which is a non-specific treatment for autoimmunity. If it's very painful, we talked about marijuana in the beginning of this podcast. I'm not suggesting you just smoke marijuana, but there's actually some promising research on the use of certain specific extracts of marijuana that don't make you so much stoned, but they might have a beneficial effect on autoimmunity and inflammation and nerve pain. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to see the advent of products like Sativex, cannabidiol. I talk about these in my podcast this week as a means of treating refractory pain problems, cancer pain, and also neuropathy pain. So that
and
might
you know,
be.
The use of marijuana medicinally is not completely new. When I was in dietetics and covering the geriatric unit in a hospital, the doctors were constantly prescribing Marinol to our patients who had little or no appetite. Now that's a derivative of marijuana to help stimulate appetite.
Right.
You know, so it's good. Anything that they can find.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So sounds good. Do we have any additional questions?
We do. All right, let me see.
We have time for one more.
Okay. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I train a 17-year-old athlete who comes down with complete exhaustion during a baseball game. Nausea, irregular breathing, dizziness, went to the ER. His electrolytes are all out of whack. No doubt this is an issue of overexertion, dehydration, and all of that. In this situation, this child was told to take a multivitamin or mineral supplement, drink more water, take it easy. Is there something else I could do in regards to a diet when I give this person advice?
This is a person who's in the sports field.
Yeah. Right. This is a coach. This is John from Kansas City.
You know, I have to say, I've seen kids like that. You know, the parents sometimes bring in kids who are, these days there's a lot of press for kids to become super athletes, to win athletic scholarships. And sometimes the kids break down under the onslaught of training, you know, like hours and hours of swimming every day and heavy duty training in, say, you know, baseball, football camp and things like that. And, you know, sometimes, you know, there's a kid like that will have come down with mono, you know, just the stress of the exercise has depleted them. Sometimes there's an adrenal issue, you know, like a crashed adrenals. And so, yeah, you know, it's useful to make sure that it's adequate electrolytes. You know, they're electrolyte drinks. I'm not too partial to a Gatorade, but they're cleaner versions of that. We've suggested some cleaner alternatives to Gatorade for making sure the patients...
Coconut water.
With, like, we have a multi-mineral thing, don't we? It's...
Trisalts,
yeah.
Trisalts are a wonderful idea.
So trisalts with coconut water is a good way to rehydrate.
That's true. You know, people are so afraid of salt that salt in hot weather and when you're sweating a lot is not a bad thing. You need to replace your sodium.
Right.
So taking something like trisalt, having even like a tomato juice or something like that instead of a Gatorade is helpful. Make sure you're drinking plenty of water. Maybe post-exercise recovery things like D-ribose might even be helpful, or even a whey protein smoothie where you could add some trisalts to it and get your hydration and your protein that way. Mm-hmm. So you can rehydrate and recover. That might be something.
Right. But hard to tell, you know, without actually examining the patient, seeing, you know, doing performing certain tests, seeing what previous blood tests have revealed. To come up with a clear-cut answer on this one. So, you know.
That would require a consult, yeah.
Okay. So, all right. Well, I think that pretty much covers it. So you'll be on vacation this week, so enjoy.
Yes, thank you very much.
And we will return next week with some additional information, hopefully that you can find useful, on Q&A with Layla. Remember, send your questions and your inquiries to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's where if we select your question, we'll read it on the air and we'll attempt to answer it as best we can. Thanks for all the kind comments and keep on listening. We are going through the roof on Facebook and Twitter. And via our newsletter, subscribe to our newsletter via drhoffman.com and check out all that we have to offer there. Lots more to Intelligent Medicine than just the weekly radio program. Thanks a lot, Layla, for joining us.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.